First Baptist Church of Redmond, March 13th, 2016, In the Middle.
Psalm 102, 24 through 28. I said, O my God, do not take me away in the midst of my days.
Your years are throughout all generations.
Of old you laid the foundation of the earth.
And the heavens are the work of your hands.
They will perish, but you will endure. Yes, they will all grow old like a garment.
Like a cloak you will change them, and they will be changed.
But you are the same.
And your years shall have no end.
The children of your servants will continue, and their descendants will be established before you. Thank you. Please be seated.
Thank you very much. I almost put a picture of Pirate Pete up here as my placeholder slide. Why is that? If you're familiar with the VeggieTales things that are now what's in the Bible, you'll recognize there's a character called Pirate Pete. And he says that when you look at church history, he went from church history through the starting of the church, through Billy Graham, and he talks about what's in the middle. So we're talking about today what's in the middle, because that's where our Bible writer finds himself today. One of the scriptures that we read just now of old, hast thou laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of thy hands, that's something our in the middle writer writes. This is a very familiar quote. You'll people like this. Count your blessings. Things can always get better and could always be worse. You kind of find yourself in the middle. And I love this picture because this is a picture that reached out to my heart in a lot of ways. I always tease people who will take their animal and dress their animal like it was a human, with hats or coats or little slippers. And all those things. We have little shoes for our dog, Midnight, for she walks in the snow. And Midnight has a little jacket to wear, a little like a horse blanket thing if she goes out. But sometimes people just love to dress their dog up in lots of different clothes, talk about painting their dog's fingernails and stuff. And so when I thought of this, I thought, here's a cat that's had better days. Because this cat is wearing clothes. Somebody's put this cat in pajamas. And this cat has the ring of shame. I've never seen a cat with the ring of shame. So this poor cat is, you know what? Like I said, when they said it couldn't get worse, I didn't mean that as a challenge. Sometimes you feel that way. What is going on? I don't understand. Why are things working out the way they are? And if you have your Bible, you will, and if you don't, I'm going to put it up here anyway, you will see the unique title of Psalm 102. So remember, our Hebrew friends, when you saw this text appear, not a heading in your study Bible, but the text appear, this is the first verse of the Hebrew Bible, and I take these as from God, and so we look at this as an explanation for what's going to follow. No other psalm says this. A prayer of the afflicted, when he is overwhelmed and pours out his complaint before the Lord. This is the prayer of someone who needs to talk to God because of what their heart feels, because of life's troubles. God, this is what's up. I need to talk to you, because talking to anybody else isn't going to help. I'll talk about a couple of the terms that are in there. In my Bible, they use the word prayer and the word complaint, because this person, I don't think, is complaining against God. We're going to explain that. A prayer. Five psalms have the word prayer in their title, a prayer. This is one of them. We've looked at a couple of the other ones. We haven't looked at all of them. The only one after this is Psalm 142. I want to look at the word complaint. This person, I think this is, so I'm talking about the version I use, my New King James Bible. Yours might say something different, but complaint is a common way to render this. This person is not complaining, I don't think. This word complaint is not used all that much in the Bible, 14 times in the Old Testament, but really it has the idea of someone who needs to talk because of their worries, things that are on their mind. So normally that would be a complaint. I need to go to the complaint desk and tell them what you need to do. No, this is just something, somebody says, you know what, this is on my mind, it bothers me, and I just feel like I need to talk about it. So that's what prayer is about. It's a prayer of someone who's got things going on in their life, and they need to talk to the only person who really will respond to them in the way they're hoping, and the person who could change their circumstance or change their life and give them the strength to continue, and that is God. So really, when I look at this, I think it says, when he is overwhelmed and pours out his worries before the Lord, I think that is the point. The idea of focusing that words are the idea. Proverbs 23:29 talks about this and uses the same term as translated babbling. Some other places in the Old Testament have the idea of words. So this is somebody who's just got some words they need to get out of their chest. God, I got to talk to somebody, and I've talked to the people, and I'm blue in the face. I'm going to talk to you now. So that's what's going on. God, I'm going to pray, and I've got to just tell you. I've got to talk to somebody. I'm going to talk to you and tell you what's on my mind. What I want to focus on is the prayer of the afflicted. This person is perhaps even having physical pain because of what they're experiencing, but they definitely have emotional pain and anguish. Sometimes your heart and your soul just feels kind of crushed, and that's the way this person feels. This word here, translated for us, afflicted, I want to illustrate so you can see where this person is coming from. Genesis 16, when Sarah began to mistreat Hagar, and Hagar took off on her own. This is the discomfort that Hagar felt. It's what the lawless do to the defenseless. It speaks of the pain inflicted on Joseph's ankles when he was tied up, when he was taken captive and gone to Egypt. It sets forth what Egypt did to Israel. More than slavery, they were afflicted. They suffered. Numbers 24, and in Judges, it describes the physical pain brought by war. It's used for what God does to his enemies. Do you see the idea of this word? This word is pain, suffering, and discomfort. And what our writer does is our writer is finding himself in the middle. Our writer, it's not as bad as it could be, but it's definitely not as good as he expects. So there's three sections to this psalm. We're going to glance at a couple of them. He's in serious trouble. He feels alone. He's isolated. But here's the point. He knows his Bible. And he reads his Bible and sees how God has been powerful and merciful and good to his people. So he's praying to God. God, you've helped people before. I am not just a people. I am a person in your family. I need you to intervene on my behalf. And this is what the section we just read. God, you are the creator. You're the master. I need you to help me. He begins, hear my prayer, O Lord, and let my cry come to you. This prayer is painfully urgent, yet notice this person, and so I wanted to get rid of that word complaint because I don't think that's what they meant to say, and I don't think that is what they said, but they understand what that translation is there. They're praying and telling God about their pain and worries and troubles them. So this person is respectful and humble as they pray to God. God, I've got these things going on. I want to tell you about them. This person is suffering. But this person's suffering has not caused them to abandon their faith. These are the words of a, at least, competent, faithful believer, if not a mature believer. But this is somebody who's having issues and problems. Trusting Christ is not going to resolve all your problems. Trusting in Christ is supposed to help you make it through your problems and show you some guidelines on how to handle it and what not to do. In their trust, they are turning to God first. They have not taken steps that are displeasing in his sight. They haven't got to wake up in the morning and say, well, I did this, and here's the reason why, and I'm sorry, but here's what's going on. This is a person who has stayed close, stayed faithful, and they're turning to God. And what they're asking is, God, don't hide your face from me. Old Testament more than New Testament, but the idea of showing the face or hiding the face is how you showed someone you liked them. If you walk into a room and someone doesn't look at you, avoids eye contact, they see you coming, and they look down, they look over, they look up, they walk away, they find somebody else to talk to, you know they're avoiding you. So this is the idea is, God, don't avoid me. I need your help. And they're seeing God as the primary source of their relief and help. They went to God without trying other things instead. So this is somebody who doesn't have a dramatic testimony of recovery. God, I had problems, and I bailed out on you. Sometimes, oh, well, what a tremendous thing to have this great testimony of such and such. And you know what? I think it's a greater testimony when you don't have problems. It's a greater testimony when I don't get up and tell you about my years in prison, or by when I was hiding in a Mexican jail, or when I had to get over my addiction to opioid painkillers, or such and such. It's better if I have that kind of testimony. And that's what this person does. They don't have that kind of testimony. They've turned to God. But God, I want you to know that they still don't have everything going on. This is one of the great figures of speech in the Bible, and this is what I put on my Facebook to try and generate a little interest. They describe their problems. I'm going to start reading in verse 3. For my days are consumed like smoke. My bones are burned like a hearth. My heart is stricken and withered like grass, so that I forget to eat my bread. They're so stressed they're not eating. Because of the sound of my groaning, my bones cling to my skin. I am, here we go, like a pelican of the wilderness. I am like an owl of the desert. Why are they talking about that? So when you look in here, they're describing what their soul is like. And the idea of the pelican of the wilderness and the owl of the desert. I know there's a New Orleans Pelicans. I don't think this is their team verse. But the idea is that those are animals that people tend to invoke or discuss when they're feeling gloomy. It would only have been worse if they would have talked about a vulture. But the idea of an owl is seen as a kind of silent, kind of a quiet, keep to itself kind of animal. Pelicans have a similar reputation. As a matter of fact, in the days of the early church after the resurrection of Christ, believe it or not, one of the early Christian symbols was the pelican. Now, they quit doing that as a little bit of science advanced because pelicans tend to feed their young beak to beak. And when pelicans ingest their food, when they give it out, somehow their food is slightly red in color. And so people used to think that mother pelicans were giving their blood to their children. And that's why it became a Christian symbol. Later people realized that wasn't the case. But these birds are associated with distance, with loneliness. Notice it's the pelican in the wilderness. They tend to not be in the wilderness lost. They tend to be by water. An owl of the desert. Owls don't tend to fly in the desert. They tend to be in forested areas. So these are creatures who are out of place. Give you a gloomy picture. And, you know, how did they get there? How'd that bird, how'd that owl get out in the desert? How'd that pelican get so many miles away from the ocean? They're lost. So that's what this person is trying to depict, that they are stuck. They are lost. They feel empty. They don't know what to do yet. This person goes on and looks at what God has done. Verse 12, you, O Lord, shall endure forever in the remembrance of your name to all generations. You will arise and have mercy on Zion for the time to favor her. Yes, the set time has come. And up through the 20s, most of the way through 21, 22, 23, he's reminding himself, this person knows their Bible, that God is powerful to save. God can give me the strength for the day. I pray that God will change my circumstance. If not, give me strength for today. Sufficient for the day, the New Testament says, is the evil thereof. God has responded when people have prayed before. He shall regard the prayer of the destitute and shall not despise their prayer. God, other people have prayed. I'm praying to you now. New Testament, you have that picture. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. So you can picture that psalm there, 102, verse 17, as really what this person is finding as their peace. God, remind me. God, teach me. God, help me. By the way, sometimes things happen in the psalm, and this happens quite a bit in the psalms, where someone is pouring out their heart to God, and they're expressing their feelings. And someone in the New Testament, under God's direction, will use those words and say, look, this person had an experience that shows us the very same thing that Jesus was thinking. One of the things that the New Testament does is help us see that sometimes these psalms have a little bit more depth to them. And part of the passage that we read today, from Psalm 102, is quoted in Hebrews chapter 1, verses 10 through 12, and ascribed to Jesus. Jesus is described as the Creator. You, O Lord, in the beginning laid the foundation of the earth. He's described as God, self-existent. He needs no one else. They will perish, you will remain. As sovereign, like a cloak, you will fold them up so that they will be changed. And he himself is that immutable and changing. You are the same, you are eternal. Your years will not fail. So, this makes this then, in my mind, a messianic psalm. Why? The New Testament tells us. It's a value to look at your Bible as a unit and see what it has to say. But in this case, the New Testament gives us clarity that as this writer spoke and poured out their heart to God, God guided their words and had these words have significance beyond their own personal awareness. This person holds on and trusts that God, if I put my trust in you, you generally do not forsake your people. The children of your servants will continue. This is this person's hope and their dream. God, I'm having problems. I'm assuming you haven't left me here alone to be destroyed. God, I don't know what I need to do, but help me to persevere. They're praying, God, stay with me. God is committed to his servants and to their posterity. And the heavens will change, but God's people will endure. That's how this psalm ends. The children of your servants will continue, and their descendants will be established before you. For us, sometimes what we see as we go through our life may try to betray our faith. God, how come if you're in heaven and I follow you, how come things aren't like they could be? Yet faith itself is hope and belief in God's promises to himself and to us. We talk about personal faith, belief, trust. God, I believe that things are going to be the way you say and not just what I see. And ultimately, God himself is the ground of everything. We hope and we believe that God is going to make the difference, that God being with us will give us the strength. And as it says, what can man do to me? Psalm 56:11. In God I have put my trust. I will not be afraid what man can do to me.